So my audio recorder is on. So once again, this is a session on generative analytics for the course Ethics, Analytics, and the Duty of Care, Module 2. And the module is Applications of Analytics. And the idea of generative analytics here is that an artificial intelligence system doesn't just diagnose or even recommend things. In recent years especially, we've seen a greater and greater capacity led by tools like GPT-3 for artificial intelligence to actually create new artifacts or new learning content. And so that's a significant change from what we've seen of artificial intelligence in the past, and so it's necessary to look at this new category of applications or uses of AI and analytics, generative analytics. As with the previous videos of this series, the method is going to be that I look at a series of types of generative analytics and discuss each of these briefly. Again, the purpose of this isn't to give us a deep and definitive knowledge of any of these technologies in particular. Any one of these slides could be an entire course on its own. The purpose of going through an overview like this is to give us, as part of the overall framing of the subject of ethics in analytics, some understanding of what the applications are, and even in particular, some understanding of what the benefits of analytics are, so we can understand the motivation for wanting to use these systems, and even to use these systems in contexts that some people might call unethical. So, to our list. So, again, generating original content based on properties or parameters of the data combined with predictions or requirements for future data is what gives artificial intelligence the capacity to create new artifacts. Neither humans nor machines work from a proverbial blank slate when they're creating something new. They create from something that already exists, and then they anticipate or project or associate new properties with the old thing, maybe combining, reshaping. There's a variety of techniques that can be used in order to create new content. I think that understanding generative analytics will help us understand not only how computers can be creative, but over time will also help us understand how humans can be creative. So the first and probably the most famous examples of generative content, computer-generated content in an online environment is chatbots. You may all recall Julia, the chatbot from the 1990s, which was pretty bad. There was once a chatbot that quote-unquote ran for president of the United States. It was called Jackie. And today, chatbots have become sophisticated customer service agents that are able to carry out, I won't say an intelligent conversation with you. I've had some pretty unintelligent conversations with automated chatbots. But conversations that are smart enough to detect what it is that you're trying to understand and at least make the effort to throw some resources your own way. So there's several aspects to a chatbot. One aspect is the understanding of what you're saying. And this is significantly difficult. It's not simply a case of audio to text transcription, although it is that, but it's also a case of being able to recognize what are significant or salient concepts in what you're saying and be able to associate those concepts with typical sorts of requests or questions that a person might ask. in a sense, the AI that played against Ken Jennings' Deep Blue in Jeopardy was really nothing more than a sophisticated chatbot, and pretty smart one too. Of course, not all content is going to be generated in real-time conversations. There's a wide range of applications already today that automatically generate content that appears in leading newspapers. For example, the Washington Post has for a number of years used artificial intelligence to write sports stories. These are fairly formulaic stories that don't need a lot of extra work and customization in order to produce, you know, a perfectly acceptable project. But as this capacity advances, the types of content that can be produced become more complex and also more compelling. I reference here an application called Kafka that is a machine writing algorithm that can write articles from scratch. And the question, as you see in the diagram, can a machine learn to write for the New Yorker? I would also include in this category AI-generated software. There are computer algorithms that support or actually write software for you. I use a product called Visual Studio Code by Microsoft, and over time I've seen more and more useful software authoring assistants appear as plugins for that environment. I've grouped a number of things under the heading of auto-generated animation. Maybe I should change the title of this, but here I'm thinking not just of cartoons that are created by AI or analytics, but also images or video such as is produced by deepfakes, any sort of animated content. What's significant here is that the AI is able to produce videos, people, sounds, whatever, that are sufficiently new as to be considered unique. And there's a series of posts and examples out there. You know, these people do not exist. This sign does not exist. This poem does not exist. There's even an artificial intelligence that produces death metal on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. Now, it might not be the greatest music in the world, but this is certainly beyond the capacity currently of any human. Intelligent and insightful conversation and content production may help artificial intelligence produce coaching applications. Now, what's interesting about coaching is that this is something that hasn't been available to most of us for most of the time. Sure, athletes get coaching. It's expensive and time-consuming, which is why the best coaching is reserved for professional athletes. Executives get coaching. The highly paid executive has an expensive personal coach or mentor to help them through those difficult business meetings or, as they say, tough decisions. But for the rest of us, we're kind of on our own. With AI and analytics-backed coaching, we can access the same sort of resource that athletes and executives can access. We're already beginning to see some of this and analytics tools that are diagnostic in nature that give us feedback on our performance. But now when these tools begin to offer comments, suggestions, recommendations, training programs, encouragement, motivation, and more, now you have something that is very much producing the same output and hopefully the same result as an actual coach. It may be argued you have to have a human to have a coach, But, the choice isn't for most of us between having a human or having an AI. The choice is between having an AI or having nothing. And having an AI coach is probably much better than having nothing. Learning analytics will not just provide coaching in the moment, but also coaching that helps us over the long term. For example, on the slide here, I have the suggestion that they may help students develop self-regulated learning. They also may help with things like pattern recognition, critical thinking, with negotiation, conflict resolution, other things like that, what they call the soft skills that help people get by in an increasingly complex world. Related to all of these is content curation. Now, it might be said, and not unreasonably, that perhaps content curation should be classified as a type of prescriptive analytics, focusing on the role of the curator as someone who recommends content. But arguably, and I would argue here, curation is about much more than selecting and presenting content. There's also very often an act of interpretation and presentation that happens, and this does involve the production of new content. Everything from the creation of metadata to the writing of those short synopses that show up on the little cards beside artwork in a museum, to the creation of a collection that may mix different themes. All of these are grist for the mill of an AI content curation engine. And so we can imagine seeing in the future new ways of seeing content presented that give us an almost unhuman, or yeah, unhuman, not inhuman, but unhuman perspective on different artifacts from different cultures with different backgrounds. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing that. And of course, everyone's bugbear is the whole idea of artificial teachers or artificial tutors. And right now, we're not predicting robots talking to us in front of a classroom, teaching us instead of a human. That wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for a variety of reasons. But we can easily imagine, even today, artificial teaching assistants. And in fact, there was a product called Jill Watson that was used as an artificial tutor in a university class that actually fooled the students into thinking that she was human. Should I call a robot teacher she? It's hard to say, isn't it? These teaching assistants are already being deployed in fields like law, medicine, and banking, and we will begin to see them in other less profitable courses and programs in the future. And it's one of these things, again, we're not going to go from nothing to artificial teachers. We're going to progress slowly as the capacity of these AI-supported tutors and teachers is slowly increased, changing, and in some ways eliminating many of the traditional duties of human teachers. So those are some of the generative analytics, and you may well think of many more ways in which an artificial intelligence can be creative. If you do, then I recommend that you go to the All Applications page in Module 2 and make your suggestion for a new type of analytics under the category of generative analytics. So that's it for this video. In the next video, I'll be talking about some deontic applications of analytics. By deontic, what we mean is they go beyond making recommendations, beyond creating new content, and into the realm of telling us what should be done, what is right, and what is wrong. And I think that's where some of the most interesting applications of analytics are coming up. So that's it for now. Thank you for joining me. I'm Stephen Downs.